Welcome in, everybody, ladies and gentlemen. Perrin Johnson filling in for Marcus Maben and Steve Rummage. As Marcus had some situation he had to take care of, so I'm going to fill in for him. Got a couple things we want to get to here, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I went to practice yesterday. Got to see the team. My man Brian Hall. What's going on, Brian?
What's up, Perrin?
So, you know, Brian, I'm just happy to be here. You know, good to see you as always, man.
It's been,
I always see you behind the scenes. I'm always cutting up with you off in the office and all that other stuff. So, but anyway.
It was a pleasant surprise to see you come in studio today.
Yeah, I came, you know, I went to Heitzman's this morning, brought off some donuts, you know.
That's what I was saying. You showed up with gifts. You came and brought some donuts. Got myself a long john back here. Everything's good.
Yeah, everybody wants to work on their summer bodies right now. Brian, no, I'm trying to keep everybody with some extra
LBs. I got the
cream-filled
donut.
Yes. Oh, okay. That's a good one, though. That's a real good one. So shout out to Heitzman's Bakery. But a couple things I want to get to here. One, I went to practice yesterday. Got to see the team.
I'm excited to hear about this.
And you know, me and swung by there. Me and my best friend, my voice of reason, Larry O'Bannon.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, we got to hang out and go watch the guys practice yesterday. It was good to see some familiar faces, some old faces, and some new faces down there. Also, I want to talk to you all about David Turner Jr. Day that we're having here at ESPN Louisville as well. And also want to talk a little bit about the draft. And if you have any questions, anything you want to know about what I saw yesterday, I will comment to an extent, but not fully in detail because, you know, you can't give away all your news. And also want to talk about a comment that Rick Stansberry made. He brought up something very interesting here.
Talk about my boy like that?
No. Actually, he brought up some very good stuff. I want to touch on that a little bit as well. So, but first off, I want to tell everybody here that's listening on 93.9 DeVille, ESPN. Today here is David Turner Jr. Day here at ESPN Louisville. And what that is about is David Turner is a six-year-old boy who loves Pokemon, skateboarding, arts and crafts, and all types of things. On 4/17/18, he was discovered that he had a brain tumor, and he had a biopsy that confirmed his tumor was a DIPG tumor, which is a grade 4. And his tumor is so rare that one of two children in the whole state of Kentucky even have this tumor. So, and with this tumor and with everything, no drugs work on this tumor. Radiation treatments don't work on this tumor. And David has his last radiation treatment today. His prognosis is it's the same as it's almost equivalent to a 40-year-old man, and the survival rate of something like this, of this nature, of this magnitude, is 9 months from once you get diagnosed with it. So because David's mom and Elizabeth, their dad, have launched David's adventure and vowed to make every day the best day ever for David, we want to give him a new experience every day, and we're going to provide that here at the studio at the station for David. And so far, we're also going to do – he's done a couple things here. He's done some things with the Kentucky State Police, the Louisville Fire Department, the Louisville Soccer, Louisville baseball team, as well as Louisville City FC. So we're going to have a great day here.
Yeah, he's going to be coming in. He's actually going to be helping produce the drive this afternoon. You can tune in at 3 o'clock. He'll be doing all the SportsCenter updates at the top of the hour. And he'll be jumping in as a little bit of a co-host with Luke Hancock and Mark Ennis.
Yes, and if you go to ESPN 680 or 939 DeVille, our social media accounts via Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you can click on the GoFundMe account and donate to David and his family for the GoFundMe that we have to pay for his medical bills and making sure we can continue his greatest day ever every day. So, and if you're not sure about, to give you more clarity on this, the average cost of taking care of David and giving treatment is $30,000 per month. So that is not cheap. And we want to make sure we can provide that and give David the best experience of his life every day, each and every day. So, but going forward, I want to say this. So I went to practice yesterday and, It's only been kind of 2 months since the strength coach is here and Chris Mack has been putting things in place here and the team is moving forward. And I tell you what, Brian, I never, you know, it's crazy to see two different philosophies up close. But I will say this, the physicality that and the amount of muscle mass that these guys have put on is truly remarkable in the 2 months they've been here. You know, Coach Pitino always wanted long, lean guys that could run up and down, rebound, and fly up and down the court everywhere. We are probably going to be the most physical brand of basketball in Louisville in a long time.
So props to the strength and conditioning coach.
Oh, he is. In. Yes.
He's bringing I'd say, like you said, the build on the players seems kind of different in the sense that you look at some of the West Virginia teams that he worked with, they're bigger, bulkier guys. You look at like a Javon Carter, and he's a stockier guard, and just it's something that I like. It's a tougher brand of basketball. I like having a little bit of toughness to the team.
Yeah,
we've lacked that for a little while.
It's been a while. It's not that guys weren't physical or guys weren't strong when Coach Patino was here or Ray Ganon didn't do a great job. It's we're gonna be a real gritty team. We're gonna be a lot tougher. And that's because of the physicality. We're not gonna be a crazy run up and down. Like Coach Patino would do stuff like this. He would have a guy, you would pressure a guy, and if you got beat, another guy would rotate. And then you would send another guy to make a run, rotate to your defender. So if you got beat on defense, I would run to your guy and you would run to my guy. And that much of a sense. But a lot of what they're doing right now is mainly just like strong, physical, on-ball defense and then keeping guys out the paint. And it's almost like similar to Virginia's, to give you an idea. You know, we're going to –
I think that's kind of a form of the pack line, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very much so that. So it's two key principles. We're going to keep guys out the paint, and we're not going to let guys post up on the block. And when you talk about those two things, I mean, I know it's easier said than done, but I mean, those two specific principles are some major things. And I tell you what, they're it's all fundamentals. We're gonna get bigger. We're gonna be more physical, and we're gonna have great triple threats, and we're gonna work a ton on our footwork. And it's a ton of that each and every day. And I'm telling you, Jordan Wara looks like he has two Cornish shins for shoulders now.
Well, it sounds like he's going towards that lineup where he's going to just play four out, one in, and I guess that's how you compensate. You try to keep people out of the paint so that you only have one guy down there, and he's your rim protector. He's your last guy. Your rebounder does all the dirty work.
Yeah, Darius Perry, I tell you what, you know how he played in a T-shirt most of last year?
Yeah.
He's probably not playing in a T-shirt this year.
Okay.
He had his shoulders. They
don't fit in there?
No, I'm telling you, man. He probably went from a 40 regular to a 44 extra long, like, you know. Non-regular, like he has shoulders, and he almost. You remember how Lamar Jackson put on all that weight from this year to last year?
Yeah,
he kind of looks like that a little bit.
Okay,
and so I'm really impressed.
Perry. I think he's got a lot of potential.
Yes, I mean it's really impressive how physical, how much more physical these guys are playing.
Well, he was kind of that way to begin with. He was kind of our pesky defender that could do that, and I think if you're talking about that style, he's going to develop greatly with Coach Mack, knowing that. You know, that's the way the team is going. Because I mean, when it came, you know, he reminds me a lot of when Russ Smith and Peyton Siva were doing that backcourt press. Like, he could be one of those pressure guys like a Preston Knowles or something like that.
Yeah, he's going to be a real problem on defense this year. And I know people are saying, what's going to be the biggest difference between last year and this year? You know, when Rick Pitino was here, a lot of the talent level and when things were going on where guys were pressing, trapping, flying up and down the court. And you're going to still see some of that, but I really just feel like the physicality is really going to be on another level. And I'm so glad to see some of that. And it was good, and it was good to just sit back and watch those guys instruct. You know, Coach Dino's really hands on, but Coach Mack, you know, when Coach Patino would talk to you, he would yell at you.
Yeah.
And he might say some words that I can't say right now, but he wanted you to understand the message between the words that he was saying.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Yes, with a lot of language in there in between. Gotcha. But Coach Mack his approach is a little bit different, and it's really you can see it getting through the guys, mm-hmm. And the energy in the gym is a lot more different. It's a lot more relaxed.
In a good relaxed way, right?
Yeah, but I mean, don't get me wrong. He's on them. They're on them. They're riding. They're on them. But it's not everybody's not so pensive.
Gotcha.
Not you know. So
I like that though.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see that and watch that go forward. So
I have a question. After you go into practice, you know, I think a lot of people have been hearing that Stephen Enoch is going to make a very big impact for the Cards this year. Everybody that has been to practice, you, Luke, different people have spoke very highly of him. What type of player is he? Is he more of a guy that's going to bang down low and be that physicality guy? Is he a rim protector? Is his offensive game, you know, really? What he's known for. I mean, obviously, I know that I've heard he can knock down a little bit of a jumper and has some post moves, but what does Stephen Enoch bring to the Cards next season?
You know, when seeing him yesterday, I was amazed at the size that he is. He's legit 245. He might be 255.
Ooh, that's a big boy.
He might be 250.
He's about 6'10", 6'11".
Yeah. So, you know, watching him yesterday for a guy that big, and he's very fluid and very agile. I'm happy that he can knock down shots, But to be honest with you, with that body, I don't really want him knocking down jumpers. You know, Jordan Warra's got great range. VJ King, who was being physical yesterday, has great range. And when he's not physical, Coach Mack reminds him that he's not being physical enough. You know, VJ's body looks a lot better. He was 195. He played at 195 last year. Mm-hmm. I think he's about 215, 218, somewhere around there.
I feel like I've been saying this for a while, but I feel like VJ's due for the breakout at some point. I think this could be the year. I think you look at his kind of development. He had Rick Pitino his freshman year, and he came in and, you know, made some freshman mistakes and needed to learn to play defense a little bit more and stuff like that. You know, and then it's nothing against Coach Padgett, but I wonder what kind of development he got over the past year, kind of moving forward, and maybe he kind of needs that one more year with a big-time coach, and Chris Mack might come in here and make all the difference in the world, just a completely different style, and just kind of – it's almost like a change of scenery without leaving Louisville, and it might be great for VJ King.
No, I think it's a good fresh restart for him. And you know, when you watch Jordan Warren play, I feel like he came in and he lost a ton of weight. And when you lose a ton of weight, you lose a lot of strength. And I feel like now when you watch him play, he looks a lot better physically. But
you said he looks a little leaner.
Yeah, he looks leaner, but his body fat was a major thing. But his arms, the development in his shoulders and his arms is a lot better. So I'm just really impressed with the amount of work that they've done in so little time. And it's really going to be taken off as well. So go ahead and give us a call. Give us a text on the text line here as we are here in studio. And we're going to talk about all things here and everything we need to talk about here as we sit back and we talk about things and go into detail. So if you have any questions, you want to know anything that we saw yesterday, feel free to call in. I have no problem in explaining some things. I can't say everything that I saw, but I will give you as much as I can without giving away too much, if that makes any sense. So we're going to go to the phone lines right here. Here we go. And who am I speaking with?
Big T.
Big T. T, what's going on, T? I must have lost him. And
Jeff.
Jeff, what's going on, Jeff? Okay. Matt, is Jeff there?
Hold on for me, Jeff. We're having problems.
Okay. Is he there? Nope, 1 second. What we got? Oh, lost Jeff too. Oh, somebody's calling back. Anyway, on the text line, we got a question. How did Ryan McMahon look strength-wise, shot-wise? Ryan is not missing. There wasn't like a full practice. A lot of it is individual instruction. But Ryan looks good. The defense was a lot better. I know practice, they don't call as many fouls as obviously they do in the games because it's practice. So, but Ryan's body looked better. He looked stronger. I mean, you're not going to see a lot definition-wise out of Ryan, but like he played a lot stronger than he did last year, if you want to talk about that as well. We got Jeff on the line. Jeff, what's going on? Thanks for calling in. Jeff.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you now, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Hey, I like you guys talking about the strength stuff, and I know that you got to work under Coach Ganong. I did when I played football. I wish he was still there because he was a pretty intense guy. But we get how that happens. You know, the one thing you were talking about with the guys bulking up and playing bigger, and I can't help but think that when you see guys like. Last year, Ray Spalding and Dang Adele and those guys, if they were a little bulkier and a little stronger and a little more physical, we might have seen a little bit of different style of play for them, and they may have been, much better players. And, I mean, just different philosophy. Instead of them being lean and fast and moving around, I mean, Dang looked like the kind of guy that, if they really wanted to bulk him up, he could have been a big physical guy. And the same with, Ray Spalding. He was kind of lean already, but, bulk those guys up a little bit and let them pound down there under the basket. I think that, you could see some tremendous differences. And, with the guys that you were talking about with their growth so far, we'll see a different kind of game. And I think that, it'll be a good thing for those guys because they'll play more of a physical basketball game instead of such a quick, in and out. I mean, I don't know if it's just me, but I think our guys could have been stronger going to the hole, and things like that in the middle. And sometimes it looked like it'd be a little gun shy about doing that because, you know, they didn't want to get bumped around too much.
No, I mean, you're 100% right. And a lot of that is just, I guess, the style of play is two different things. You know, when you got guys that you want to run frantically all over the court and to get places faster and all those things, they almost have to be thinner, and they're going to be thinner because of the amount of running. But, I mean, when you see these guys this coming season, I mean, you'll probably see them in a football game before the season even starts. Their presence is so much more physical, and they're so much bigger guys. So it's really amazing to sit back and watch those guys.
Well, I look forward to it, man. But appreciate you guys on the radio today. You guys have a wonderful day. Enjoy this heat that we have. Try and stay cool.
No, I mean, definitely. I'm definitely not a guy that needs to work on my tan, but I will try. I'm sure I'll get a little bit of color anyway. So.
All right, bye, guys.
I appreciate it, man. So I'm really impressed with the amount of work that we got going on. Who we got next on the phone line, Brian?
Got Jerry. I got Jerry.
Okay. All right, Jerry, what's going on? Good afternoon, or good morning, I should say.
Hey, Perrin, thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Yeah, so I had a question for you. So how does the overall relationship appear between the players and the new coaching staff? Just an observation, and I'll hang up and listen to you.
Oh, okay, absolutely. Thanks for the call, Jerry. You know, it's the transition is a lot smoother than, you know, most times you get a little bit. You have guys that will resist, and you got it, and guys that won't take it in. But a lot of the guys that I've seen in past situations that resist coaching and guys talking to them, a lot of that is guys that were knuckleheads anyway. Mm-hmm. So, but with the group of guys that we have right now, they're a bunch of good guys anyway. They're not character problem guys, and they've said that as the staff. They said they're amazed at how many of these guys are good character guys. So, I mean, that
I think Pitino did a good job of doing that. He usually had some very high character players.
Absolutely. So when you talk about guys that are high character guys and guys that aren't problematic guys, you're going to sit back and basically say, well, the transition is not going to be a problem, because when you're a non-problematic guy, you want to play. So you want to come in and be receptive and, you know, understand what Coach Mack's trying to do. Two, he's got to teach a whole new philosophy of defense, a whole new philosophy in offense.
You have to want to learn.
Yes. So because if you don't learn, you're not going to play. Mm-hmm. And Coach Pitino and Coach Mack, they have two different philosophies. Then coaches have different lingo. Mm-hmm. So you got to learn the lingo, and you got to learn what they're talking about. So you got to learn all the offense, and you got to learn all the defense. And the best thing about, I feel like this, is the best thing is this. Because the timing of when Chris Mack came in, these guys are going to have to stay here for the bulk of the summer. Mm-hmm. Which is going to allow the staff
off season to work with them.
Yes, absolutely, Brian. So the whole staff is going to have to work with these guys, and they're going to have to build a lot of rapport very quickly. But plus, put in the system right now during the summer, that's going to even help them and have more advantages of getting to learn everybody as well a lot better as well.
Yeah, I think that's going to show too, because you look at last year's team. I mean, Padgett, that was the big thing. Padgett took over the team with no time to actually, you know, implement anything. I mean, he basically just was running Pitino's style, trying to himself. Yes. He didn't get an off season to work with the team. So I think that's going to make a world of difference. And obviously, definitely with like everything you said, I wanted to ask one thing about one other player too, or actually, I guess it's two if Quan Four is already on campus. But the grad transfers, Malik Cunningham, is he going to make an impact? I mean, how's he looking out there? Because a lot of people thought that he could possibly challenge Darius Perry for the starting point guard spot. But are we looking at, I mean, just obviously it's one practice, but what did you see out of him?
You know, it was really more individual instruction. It wasn't so much a practice.
Okay.
So it was all like, you know, guys, there's no more than groups of four.
Gotcha.
So
it's hard to tell.
So it's hard to tell because it wasn't a typical 5-on-5 situation. So I can't say he was making more plays than the other guy.
I gotcha.
Or he was a better defender than the other guy. But based on what I saw, if I had to start today, Darius Perry be my starting point guard.
That's what I would have thought too.
Yes, and the only reason why is two things. One, Darius looked a lot better physically in practice. He looked a lot more fluid in practice, mm-hmm, than he has in the past based on what I saw him last year. Mm. And I haven't seen enough of a clip of Trey. Not Trey, but the Cunningham kid. Mm-hmm. But his brother's name is Trey. So Malik's brother is Trey Cunningham. Trey Cunningham used to be a manager here. He used to be on the staff at Samford. Okay. So forgive me when I say Trey. So I think about Malik, I think about his brother Trey. Forgive me. But so when I'm watching them, I kind of sitting back and watching them play. But He's bigger than I thought he was. I'll say that. Especially up top. Him and but he's been in a college system in a college program for over three years. So when you look at him, he's going to already be developed. He's not like a freshman coming in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's developed. He's physically there. It's just a matter of them both learning the offense. Now, here's the kicker for their situation. You know, most cases, when you're a grad transfer, you come in to a situation with a coach that's already there. So he already has a rapport with, like, say,
so he's new and so is the coach.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry, Christian Cunningham. My fault about that. So when you say that and when you talk about those things, like, when, like, the kid that came from Harvard, Tony, what was his name? Tony Hicks.
Yeah, Tony Hicks.
When Tony Hicks came in, everybody's like, oh, he might challenge Q for the starting spot. Well, Q already had 2.5, 3 years with Rick Pitino. So you don't see a situation where Tony Hicks is going to take over that situation at point guard. With this situation, with Christian Cunningham, he's coming in at the same time as a grad transfer, as a new coach, and Darius Perry's coming in with the new coach as well. So they're all meeting Chris Mack at the same time. So when you talk about those situations right there and those things right there, they're both getting a fresh start. So they're going to have to both work for that job. But based on what I saw, I just felt like Darius is starting point guard.
Hicks came from Penn, by the way. But Penn? Okay. Yeah, it's an Ivy League school. You know, same difference.
So,
all smart up there.
Yeah, so, I mean, everybody looked great up there, and we'll see where that goes. But right now, we're going to take a break. Going to come back, and we want to remind you all that we're going to keep on rolling here. Go ahead, text in, call in if you have any questions about the team.
Don't forget, though, it's David Turner Jr. Day.
As out, yes, yes it is.
ESPN Louisville, he will be in with us later on during the drive. You'll catch his SportsCenter updates. You'll catch him on the air a little bit. He'll be making his radio debut with Mark Ennis and Luke Hancock.
Yes, and it's going to be a great experience for him to hang out with Luke and Mark later, and we want to make sure David Turner has a great day every day. So we want to try to make his best day great every single day here at 93.9 The Ville.
Middays with Marcus Maben on 93.9 The Ville is broadcasting live from the OPC Pest Services studio. Now, here's Marcus Maben and Steve Rummage.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Perrin Johnson filling in for Marcus Maben and Steve Rummage as they are out saving the world and taking care of all things outside of radio today. I'm here with my man Brian Hall. Brian, what's going on?
Nothing too much, man. I liked the update from practice. It's good because, you know, it's the off season. We do have a lot of new faces. We got a new style. Like you said, we got a new strength coach. So it's kind of good to hear a little update from somebody who's been over there and kind of seen him working out with the coaches and what some of the unanswered questions were. I think you answered for some people right there.
Malik Williams looked good, too. I mean, he looked more – he didn't do anything like that blew me away, but –
He seems like he doesn't
get pushed around anymore.
Really?
Yes.
So he's a little more physical. That's what you wanted to see out of him because he's always been able to stretch the floor a little bit, and I think that's why you're going to see a guy like Malik Williams excel in a guy like Coach Mack's style because he likes that big man who can stretch the floor.
Yeah.
But he's not afraid to throw a 6'4", 6'5", power forward out there if he has to. But if he has the ability to throw a 6'10", 6'11", Malik Williams out there that can do the same thing. I mean, because he's going to be able to knock down that shot, and I think that's going to open up a whole lot of stuff. I mean, if not, he's going to play the five, and the five is going to be able to hit the three too. And whatever lineup we throw in with him playing the five, we're going to be able to hit a three from every position on the field or on the court.
Yeah, and it was interesting because, you know, it kind of infuriated me a little bit watching the team play last year. And the reason why it infuriated me a little bit because when David was here, those guys kind of – I felt like they took advantage of David a little bit and not being as disciplined as they would have the year before.
It was more just like they were out there just having a good time.
Doing their own thing. So it'll be good to get that discipline back and that shot selection back and the defense accountability back here in the building. So.
That's what I was going to say because when you kind of compare the teams, not that we want to do that completely, but it's – you know, we did lose some talented players in like Ray Spalding and Quentin Snyder and just Honest Mahmoud, all these guys that were here last year. We brought in a couple new guys, but when you have an experienced coach in there, and like you said, he works the whole offseason with them, you know, and this is nothing against Coach Padgett, but there were times last year where it just looked like the players were kind of lost, like they didn't know what they were supposed to be doing. A lot of times in clutch moments, too, at the end of games, just didn't look like they knew what they were doing sometimes. And so I don't think you'll see lapses like that. I don't think you'll have the bad explosions either where, you know, not to relive a bad memory, but when you lose by 29 to a team like Kentucky, and when you went in thinking there was a, you know, a chance that we could win or at least we were going to keep it competitive, I don't think you're going to see those type games where we just fall apart and collapse. I don't think you'll see us collapse at the end of games where we're just lost. And that just comes with an experienced coach. And that's nothing against Padgett, because I actually think that Padgett is going to be a great coach someday.
Yes.
He's just such a smart guy. And I think he's waiting for the right opportunity right now, which I think is smart for him, because his coaching process has been kind of accelerated. Because had the whole situation not gone down, Padgett would still probably be the second or third assistant on Patino's staff and would still be probably 2 to 3 years away from becoming a head coach for the first time. He's already been a head coach for a year now.
Yeah.
So he's going to, you know, it's going to help him down the road to become a very good coach. And maybe someday we'll see him back here. But Coach Mack's going to just, the experience he has, you're going to see the difference in some of the organization of plays and different things like that.
Yes, definitely. I definitely agree with you there. Now, I want to talk to you about your guy, your school, Rick Stansberry down at WKU. And I know you're a Louisville supporter, but you love you some Tops. And I totally understand that, respect that. My mom is a graduate of Western Kentucky.
And so, I just want to make it straight. You know, I'm a Louisville First fan. And I always use the saying, you know, how we have the L1C4. I do Louisville First Tops forever.
I like that.
I'll choose Louisville first and foremost above anybody else, but the Tops are my alma mater, so they're going to hold a place in my heart forever.
No, I get that. I get that a great deal. So I want to talk to you about your guy, Mr. Stansberry, who also coached at Campbellsville University here in town. So he's got some Kentucky roots.
He's from Battletown.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And he brought up an interesting thing that I thought was really great, and I wanted to ask you about this. He said, I wish we could come up with some kind of tournament, how we can get Kentucky and Louisville and ourselves and other schools in a tournament somewhere. I think it'd be a great idea. So I wonder if you can make a tournament. I don't know who would be the sponsor around here. Maybe you could do UPS. Maybe you could do Papa John's. Let's say Papa John's because he's from the area.
There you go.
So we'll call it the Papa John's Invitational, right?
Okay.
So you have this tournament. You call it the Papa John's Invitational. You get three. Let's get three teams from the surrounding states. So for this year, let's say we did it. We would do Western.
Louisville and Kentucky.
Louisville, Kentucky.
For the state of Kentucky.
For the state of Kentucky. For the state of Ohio.
I think you do Xavier, Cincinnati, and Ohio State.
Yes. And then for the state of Indiana, you do IU, Butler, and Purdue.
Like it?
Yes. And then so now we are at three. We're at nine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So and then Tennessee. 3, 6, 9. Tennessee. So then we do Memphis up and coming coach with Penny Hardaway. We do UT with, you know,
Rick Barnes.
They're top five in the country. And then you throw in Vanderbilt up and coming coach
Bryce Drew.
They got some McDonald's All-Americans down there. They're going to be competitive next year as well. Do you think that's feasible around here? And do you think that would ignite the fan bases in the surrounding areas?
Well, let me say, first off, I applaud Coach Stansberry for trying to make this happen, because this is what, you know, helps the mid-major schools.
Right.
The schools like that be kind of forced into a tournament where the Louisvilles and the Kentuckys and the Tennessees, Ohio States, they have to play schools like Western Kentucky. Now, I mean, obviously, you know, Western's recruiting at their same level right now, but it's you know, we're talking bigger picture, long term. I think it's really cool. I mean, we've always had, you know, the preseason tournaments and the kind of middle of December Christmas tournaments and different things like that. There's no reason why you couldn't have a little mini tournament like this. Honestly, you're talking about, you know, you said 12 teams? Is that what you
Yes, mean? Yes. Three. So you have three from Ohio, three from Indiana.
You play like a round robin in your state, and they take the best team from each state to a Final Four?
Or you could just take them all together and you lump them in and do like a – have them just do a lottery and a random selection and have them play in a 12-team field.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Maui – I don't know if the Maui Invitational is 12 teams, but you could almost do it that way.
Yeah.
So, like, your opening round game might be Cincinnati versus Indiana. Mm-hmm. And then the other opening round game might be Louisville versus, you know, I don't want to say Purdue because we just played them. So, Louisville versus Memphis.
You would do it where it's, like, set up to where you could you get the opportunity for Western Kentucky to play Ohio State or to play Tennessee that they normally wouldn't. The other way that I was talking about where they come out of pool play, it would force Louisville and Kentucky to play Western every year.
Yes.
And you would have a quote-unquote champ of each state. And so you would be fighting for your state rights, like, you know, your state pride of being the best team that year in the state. And then you would take yours against Indiana's best, Ohio's best, and Tennessee's best, and you have a Final Four.
And no matter where you win in the Ohio Valley, like between Ohio to Indiana, all the way down to Tennessee, mm-hmm. you could run your mouth.
You could. If you beat all those, you own that region.
No, I mean, I think it would be remarkably fun for the area.
It'd be a little mini tournament you could get up for in like the middle of December.
And that or Thanksgiving around here?
Yeah, right around. You could do it closer to the beginning of the year and around Thanksgiving. But, yeah, I mean, Rick Stansbury, obviously, he's on board with the Coach Calipari's and Coach Mack and Coach Barnes and all these guys. Would they be on board for something like that? Because a lot of, you know, Louisville's always used, you know, the non-conference games as kind of a tune-up for the ACC play because they got to go through that brutal run of so many teams.
Yes.
Do they want to then throw on another three or four top 25 teams in November and December?
And you rotate the tournament every year. So the first year.
I would 100%.
I mean, the first year is in Nashville. You know, second year it's in, you know, Louisville. Third year it's in Cincinnati. Fourth year it's in Indianapolis.
As a fan, how could I not be more excited about watching Louisville play Ohio State or Tennessee or, you know, any of these Indiana or any of those schools as opposed to playing, you know, the Siennas and those kind of tune-up games that we're used to.
No, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and it's fun, you know, it's interesting, as we get a text on the text line, a texter said, WKU should have to play Murray State. You're right, but...
to get that last play-in spot?
Yes, yes.
No, I agree.
So would you have play-in games for the tournament, before the tournament?
No, I think you would just do four teams in each state. And, well, you could have, I don't know. Yeah, I'd take four teams. Because, you know, then you're going to start including the Moorhead State fans and the Eastern Kentucky fans. Obviously, Eastern Kentucky hasn't really been.
So, do you have a play-in game in every state?
Huh?
Do you have a play-in game in every state before you play those games?
I think you have to say four teams in each state. And you do a round robin where you get three games guaranteed with the other three teams that come out of your state.
Right.
And then you get potentially up to two more if you make the Final Four in the championship.
And that round robin is played in a selected city in that state every year.
So, you're guaranteed three games. You might get five.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Why are we not on the marketing team somewhere? I don't know. But, you know, Rick Stansbury also has some comments. He also made some – he also has some things to say about Charles Bassey as well. And, you know, it's not a lot of times you see a top three recruit in the country – go to a mid-major school. But ESPN wrote about this 6 months ago. They said Charles Bassey really likes WKU, and they had WKU as his leader. And, I mean, Brian, you remember that, and, you know, we all were, like, talking about that here. Like, that's crazy. And, you know, I think what we got – and you got to remember this a lot of times. When you look at the top five players in the NBA, the top 20 players in the NBA, and the guys that are the best players in the NBA, a lot of those guys – with the exception of maybe Anthony Davis and maybe Kevin Durant, they didn't go to major universities. Steph Curry did not go to a major university. When you look at Damian Lillard, he went to Weber State. You know, when you talk about some of the guys that are the best players in the world playing in the NBA, LeBron James didn't even go to college. I mean, I know he's physically blessed and he was blessed and talented, but when you talk about the guys that are the best players in the NBA, a lot of those guys did not go to major institutions to play because they went to smaller schools and they were able to develop their game. And it's almost a benefit to go to a smaller school because if Charles Bassey might get 20 shots at WKU, he might get 10 to 12 at Louisville or Kentucky or Florida for that matter. So is it almost... I almost think it's going to be more beneficial for him as a player. And I know this sounds crazy. Like, how does this guy get out of Louisville? but it might be more beneficial for him as a player to actually attend a smaller institution. Klay Thompson, he went to Washington State. I know they're not a Smith. I mean, they're a lower. They're not a giant powerhouse in the Pac-12, but I mean, it's Washington State. So here's what Rick Stansbury had to say about Charles Bassey coming to Western Kentucky.
Okay, so why are you guys shocked? Why was anybody shocked? And why shouldn't he be at Western Kentucky? You know, there's a lot of schools get five or six of those guys a year. Right? So why shouldn't one of the better players in the country go to a program that traditionally is as good as anybody in the country? Again, there's only two teams won more championships than Western. Only Kentucky and Kansas. Then there's Western. Only six other teams have 20 more win seasons than Western Kentucky. So why shouldn't a young man go somewhere where he has a chance to be special? This is a key word again, be impactful.
I mean, he's got a point.
I love it. I love, obviously, being a grad, what Rick Stansbury says there, because it's what I've been saying for a while. We always get passed off as the little brother because, you know, we're in the Sun Belt or we're in Conference USA, and I get that. And obviously Louisville and Kentucky are the powers of this state, and they always will be. But Western Kentucky continues to win conference championships, has been to a Final Four, is one of the top 10 winningest programs in the country. It's just but it's things that a lot of people don't really know about the program, because a lot of the tradition happened back in, you know, the 70s when they went to the Final Four with Jim McDaniels and guys like that. And then you look at Diddle.
Right.
And people like that. So a lot of their tradition is from the past, and their recent history, you know, dates back just to the Sweet 16 where Courtney Lee and Jeremy Evans and Stephon Pettigrew and A.J. Slaughter and all those guys were a part of that team. And that was a great, fun team to watch. That was when I was at school at Western Kentucky. I was a sophomore. But,
yeah,
you know, it has a lot of tradition, and a lot of people don't know about it.
I mean, when you look at this, let's name some of the top players in the NBA,
yeah,
that went to small schools.
Well, I mean, you look at a guy like
Kawhi Leonard. San right. Diego State.
Yep.
Steph Curry went to Davidson. I mean, James Harden with Arizona State. They're not a basketball powerhouse. They're in a power conference, not a basketball powerhouse of a school. The list goes on and on and on. I mean, Paul George went to Fresno State. Like, I mean, Gordon Hayward went to Butler. I know Butler's got good tradition, but they're not. And I know they went to back-to-back Final Fours, but they're just not. Are they a Kentucky of the world? Are they an IU of the world? I don't think. I mean, can you say that? Paul Millsap, he's one of the top 25 players in the NBA.
Even if you go back in the day, I mean, you look at like Charles Barkley, who is now on TV, one of the all-time greats. He went to Louisiana Tech, which is the same conference that Conference USA that the Western is in. You look at Larry Johnson, who went to a UNLV.
A junior college before he went to UNLV too. On top of that,
yeah. So I mean, it's something that. And Charles Bassey actually had a statement about this a while ago back to one of the Bowling Green Daily News, I believe. And he said, are you going to end up at a Duke or a Kentucky, one of the top elite programs? And he said, you know, if you're good enough, they'll find you.
He's got a point. If you build it, they will come, in a sense. But and when you talk about those things, I mean, and you look at guys that have been able to do that, like there's been a ton of guys that have been able to develop their games and not go to major schools. And I feel like you almost get trapped if you go to a major school. Like, and then you have, because Kentucky ran into this problem this year. Sasa Keela Jones is one of the top 40 players in the country. Mm-hmm. He went to UK, and, you know, one of the major things about those situations is if you go to a place and you don't play right away, your game does not develop. And if your game does not develop, then you're not getting any better. If you're not getting any better, then how does your game develop?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to him, and now he transferred. And I'm sure he'll have great success at NC State or whatever that may be, but he was not able to develop his game.
It's interesting. But Charles Bassey, like you said, going to a place like Conference USA, you wonder if it helps him or if it hurts him. Because, you know, development-wise, I think, you know, obviously you're going to want to play against the better competition. It's going to prepare you better for the future because you're going to see those type of bodies every day in the NBA. But draft stock-wise, he can go to Conference USA and dominate that conference. And yes, he could put up some crazy statistics and actually could elevate his draft stock. I don't necessarily know which way it'll go. But honestly, I don't think it hurts him to go to a school like Western Kentucky. I think regardless, you're still going to see him as a top 10 pick next year in the draft.
And it's almost baptism by fire, Brian, when you talk about it like that.
Yeah.
He's going straight to the fire. But he's the first guy that has ever gotten the Pangos All-American camp. For all of you that don't know, Pangos is a tournament run by a guy named Dino Tragonis out in California. Friend of mine, known him forever. Great guy. And Dino has the top 100 kids at his camp every year. Charles Bassey is the only kid to win back-to-back Pangos All-American camps.
Yeah, he won the MVP 2 years in a row, and that's never been done before. So that's saying a lot. And
there's a number of guys that have come through the Pangos All-American camp, and they all play in the NBA. And some of them are all-stars right now.
I'll tell you what, as a Topper alum, I'm pretty excited about what Western Kentucky's got coming in. I mean, he's not only the only piece down there. This is a team that went to the NIT Final Four last year and brought in another top 100 kid just this year. So he's they got two kids from the top 80 players in the country, including Charles Bassey, who when he reclassified moved up to number 6 in the country for this year.
Yes.
He would have been number 3 if he stayed in 2019.
Another guy that's a heck of an NBA player, went to a small school. C.J. McCollum with the Lehigh.
Oh, there you go.
He just got $100 million.
Oh, if we want to go on down the line, we can name a ton of players in the NBA that came from quote-unquote mid-majors.
Yeah, it's not about where you go. It's what you do when you get there.
When we get back, I got a recruit that I want to tell you about that could be a part of the 2018 Louisville recruiting class for basketball.
Yes, we will do that when we get back to the break, as it is David Turner Jr. Day here at ESPN Louisville, ladies and gentlemen, 93.9 The Ville.